Hey Riders, have you been spending small amounts on short-term classes, watching videos, and using up every possible opportunity for free feedback? Reworking the same pages over and over in your writing group? Are you starting to feel like you're stuck in one stage of the process? Maybe it's time to consider making a bigger investment in your career and working with an author accelerator book coach. No one can guarantee that you'll write a book that will snag an agent or excite an editor, but a coach can help you move forward, finish a book or proposal you're proud of, and approach the next stage of the process like a pro. I know it helped me. If that sounds like something you could use, visit www.authoraccelerator.com to get matched with a coach who can help you.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone, try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now, one, two, three.
Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonio, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, proposals, the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I'm the author of The Gift of Failure and The Addiction Inoculation, and you can find my journalism at The New York Times, The Washington Post, and The Atlantic.
And I am KJ Delantonio, the author of the novel The Chicken Sisters, the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent, another novel coming out this summer called In Her Boots. That'll be summer of 2022. I'm a former editor and a columnist at The New York Times, and that is me. And because I can see Jess and y'all can't, I have to share that she is sitting there wrapped in a blanket, wearing a hat in the dark, and holding a puppy. So this is the snuggly episode, apparently.
It's dark outside. It's cold. I'm freezing. There's a puppy in my lap. My mom gave me this thing for in my office, actually, which is perfect, which is kind of a blanket, but also kind of like a poncho shawl thing. And it's fantastic. It's a very good writing accessory, I think, actually.
The funny thing is that here it is not cold. It is weird.
I just refuse to turn on the heat in the house.
50 melty degrees. Ah, yeah. No, that. Yeah. Wait, what?
I mean, no, the heat is on. It's just that I grew up in New England, and I've got this Yankee frugality thing a little too badly, and I tend to leave the heat down really low, and that worked great for me when I was home alone during the day, but now there are people working here during the day, namely Tim. And he noticed that I don't put the heat above 60 in during the day. So I freeze myself out, and Tim complains about it. That's how it works around here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mark, this is the podcast on which we're going to talk about everything but writing. We're getting to a great writing topic, but I have to share that our exchange student who is from Spain came home from a friend's house the other day, and he said, they keep their house really cool. Like, he came home after spending the night, and he was like this little icicle. He's like, I'm going to go take a shower, okay? I was really cold. So it was funny.
Yeah. We do have a great topic today, and it was your idea, so I'll let you tell the peoples about it.
I will do my very best. So I wanted to talk about writing energies, which sounds a little woo-woo. Well, and maybe I don't even know that it sounds weird. Well, no, it's just like a thing. Like, sometimes your writing energy is, you have drafting energy, and sometimes you have idea energy, and sometimes you have revision energy, and sometimes you have to force your energies to work with, you know, whatever assignment that you have at the moment, but sometimes you can sort of make your life easier by rolling with the energies that you have. And I think when I was younger, and this was true of not just writing, but everything, I used to sort of have this feeling that if I do or don't want to do something now, I will always feel that way. Like, I will always only want to draft, or I will always, you know, want to write a constant stream of 800-word essays, or, you know, I will always be in X mode. And I have realized over the years that it's not like that. It's very cyclical. So I guess I wanted to talk about the cyclical nature of writing energy.
Well, and you're talking about
show title.
You're talking about energy as if it is something immutable, and I definitely want to talk about ways to hack that energy, because I have found ways to shift my energy when the need calls for it. Like, let's say a deadline. And there are ways to shift that energy too. But I really do have cycles in the energy. And that's the cool thing about it, though, is that I've learned to roll with that a little bit more and let the energy actually inform what I work on, because then I think the energy is better for the piece. I think if you have energy for something you're really excited about, you better go with that, unless you have a deadline looming, of course, in which case.
Yeah, I think some of this is that I've learned this from you, from just paying attention to what you choose to work on when and sort of the intensity that you either bring to it or don't. I am much more prone to, I have to do X, and, you know, I see you're more able to be like, okay, today I have this excitement around this one topic and I'm going to focus on it, but that doesn't mean I won't be able to go back right to the regular thing. Whereas I think I get really anxious. Oh, but if I take Friday off and work on essays, which is something I've sort of been toying with doing with the drafting that I'm doing right now, I'll lose the flow.
That's a real thing. I think flow, when I have a deadline, flow is super important. So if I'm in the editing mode, it's easier for me to keep going while I'm in it, because shifting my brain into editing mode, especially editing mode, is really hard, because it's intimidating, because you have to deal with other people's criticisms of your work, because it's nitpicky, especially the really hard stuff like, you know, editing an index or whatever. It's easier once you're in it. I saw a TikTok the other day about this guy loudly proclaiming that he just finished in less than 14 minutes something he had been agonizing over for 2 years. And that's how editing is for me. It always feels worse until I open the document and get in the flow. So if I'm in the flow of something like that, you better believe I'm going to do everything I can to stay in the flow of that. Because the colder it gets, the further away from it I get, the more of an ordeal it feels like to get back in the groove. It's like stopping exercising or something like that. But there is definitely something to be said about little things like, you know, a day that I realized that I was just not enjoying writing. And it may have been because I was working on editing or something, but it just had become, you know, that thing you say about how when you love something, it's best not to turn it into a job because then it turns it into a job, that kind of thing. Writing had become a job that particular day to me. So I wrote something that was just for me and just for fun. And it was that that special care instructions laundry blog post that ended up going crazy. And I think it was because I had so much fun writing it. And it was an incredible boost to my writing juju, to my writing energy, to my sort of falling back in love with how much fun it can be when it's really rolling. And I think that's as important as getting the work done sometimes, obviously, when you have the luxury of being able to take a day like that. I think that, you know, the other thing is that deadlines can, the word dead is there, because deadlines can deaden the fun sometimes. And I think it's really important to find ways to get the energy back. And whether that's having fun, writing for a different ideal reader, writing for just writing for yourself. And that can be as simple as a journal post. In fact, I wrote something day before yesterday, and I do not know if I will. It was about one of my kids. So I do not know if I'll ever be allowed to talk about it publicly. But it didn't matter because I had such a good time writing it, because it was so rich and it was so immediate and it was so, as Stephen King says, skin on skin. It was really close and personal. So I have no idea if I'll ever do anything with that. But it was a really good way to fall back in love with the words and to remember. You know, I don't keep a diary really. So that was one of those things I'll want to remember.
Yeah, I don't know if I have leaned too far into the side of taking this professionally. And I've sort of leaned so far that it's pretty rare for me to write something without any form of intent around it. And to me, in some ways, that is the magic. I mean, and I've always been like that to some extent. Like, I've always hated, I only do a writing prompt if you're grading me. I never journaled. I never did any of that. So there's always been a certain degree of, I do this to communicate an idea, and I do it to find my own idea, but I am also doing it to communicate with other people. And then, you know, when I really got into journalism and it became a question of producing when it has to be produced, I leaned really hard on that, but I feel like I was already doing it. I've never sat around and waited for the muse, with the result that I think that when the muse is here, as, you know, she was for you with that piece, I am maybe sometimes saying, I'm sorry, muse, but that thing is not what I want to work on, right? You know, what I'm working on now, I need to work on this. Can you got anything for this?
Well, that's not to say that I don't have an intent for that essay. I always, for me, I totally agree with you. The reason I write is to communicate with other people. I do not write to communicate with myself. Occasionally, I will write to work things out, but there is always an audience in mind. Even when I wrote this thing that I don't know that I'm ever going to be able to show anyone else, I always hope that I can, because I think that's the only reason I write. I was never one of those people that just wrote for the sake of writing for myself. I always, always, always had an audience in mind. Oh, that would be really interesting to talk to, you know, to talk to someone who writes just for the sake of writing and not for an audience, but I've always written for an audience.
No, that wouldn't interest me at all.
Well, maybe I will.
That to me, I mean, that's a line for me in terms of coaching and in terms of just everything. If that's, I get that. I'm not dissing it, but it isn't, it's just different.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Absolutely, completely agree. So hacking that energy.
Yeah.
Because let's say you have a deadline, as I did. And in fact, I've made this little video that I put on Instagram at some point. I was just really not feeling it. This is for addiction inoculation, really not feeling it, really had a deadline. And I really had to hack my energy for that. And as you can attest, because I would text you whenever I finished anything, once I got grooving at the end of that, I was churning stuff out pretty fast. Playlists, music playlists. I have trained myself to listen. And for people who don't like repetitive playlists, this might be annoying to you. But for me, a specific playlist, for me, it happens to have no lyrics, just sound. It's a little woo-woo sort of almost ambient massage-y music kind of thing. But it used to be on Spotify, which I don't have anymore. It was called like Deep Focus, I think. And it was just for focusing on work. And I thought maybe if I played that every single time I really had to do deep focus, then it would trigger deep focus. Totally worked. I tricked my brain. And I also do that. I think I've mentioned this before. I have spots where I work. If I'm sitting at the table where I'm sitting now, it's because I'm just doing admin work and I might have something else going on in the background, but it's not really serious stuff. But if I'm going to sit down and write, that happens over at a different spot. That's at my, like my main monitor. That's my no brain. We're not doing emails right now. We're doing work. So location, which is why it's harder for me to work when I'm traveling, and playlist. And the thing is, I was working on the addiction inoculation on planes out of necessity for a while there. And I actually started, because I have limited music on my phone that's actually downloaded on my phone. And so I got stuck not being able to listen to my playlist and I had to find something else. And this is going to sound horrible, but there's like a Billy Joel album, Glass Houses, from what, like 1980 or whenever that album came out.
I think I could sing that to you in order. Yeah.
For some reason, because there were so few things, there were so few things on my phone, that there's a song called All for Lena, that if you play All for Lena, that says to my brain, it's time to start working on addiction inoculation right now. Because there was so little on my phone and I couldn't be bothered to put more stuff on my phone. And so that became my working music on planes. It's really interesting how you can trick yourself into productivity if you have the habit in place, if you have the triggers in place, I should say.
I've heard a lot of people talk about playlists, and I, in the same vein, and something that I think would be an interesting approach to it, and I kind of am messing with it with this current book, was soundtracks.
Oh, interesting.
I heard, yeah, so using a soundtrack from a movie that has the same mood as what mm-hmm. you're working, you know, obviously there's no words, there's no, so I thought that was a kind of a fun approach. I have these really weird headphones, and I don't know that I am endorsing them, although I will put a link in the show notes, because, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I did this Kickstarter for headphones that were supposed to increase your focus, and they have little things that sit on your brain, and it's not so much that they do anything. They don't sit on your brain, but they sit on your scalp if they can touch your scalp. They don't do anything, but they're apparently measuring something. I don't know. It all sounds a little unlikely, and it is. But at the time, I had this kid who couldn't focus, and I thought, well, yeah. Placebo. Like, look, here, these will help you focus. And what they do is they have a choice of like 5 different kinds of ambient music for creativity for focus or for, I don't know, I don't even remember what the other things are. And there's also a web app that'll put the same kinds of music. And I do have that. And I do kind of like that. And I'll have to find it. It's not so much like music as it is like sound waves, but it both drowns out the sound around you and puts this sound into your brain. Anyway, that one works for me. But I think the magic for me, I only draft. Well, I mean, I sometimes draft by hand, or I'll draft on a Remarkable tablet, but I write in my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I can be anywhere that the laptop is, and
that's
honestly,
smart.
Could be any laptop. If you can hand me a different laptop, that would be fine. I don't really write on the desktop. I might edit.
Well, mine, I can attest to this because I have seen you, I've personally witnessed you writing just about everywhere on your laptop. And
yep, it's just the laptop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's an easy piece of magic.
Yeah. We've sat side by side on couches in hotels and you have gotten your words done. And, you know, I'm trying to trick myself into doing that. The other hack for me that is works without fail, and it works for my younger kid without fail too, is if I know I'm going to need to write once I get home from picking him up from school, I will have On Writing, Stephen King's On Writing, playing in the car on the audio, because he makes me want to write. There's mm-hmm. a couple of other things. If we watch a video about particular musicians talking about their work, Finn ends up having to run upstairs to go compose because he's so motivated. There are various films that let's say I'm going to cook dinner and I know I'd like to get some words in after dinner, I'll put in like All the President's Men or The Post or some movie where someone's on a deadline. There was a really good scene actually I watched the Netflix series Inventing Anna, about Anna Delvey, the Anna mm-hmm. Sorokin character. And the woman who played the journalist in that, she had to finish the piece before she gave birth to her baby. And the last day she worked, I think she worked 12 hours straight. And there was just, it was her with sound, with the, you know, the noise-canceling headphones in the offices of what should have been New York Magazine, but I think they call it Manhattan Magazine. And it was just her working her butt off with those headphones on. And even just watching a scene like that can kick me into productive gear. I'm thinking about the song right after Hamilton came out, the song All That, Why Does He Write Like He's Running Out of Time, all of that sort of like
mm-hmm.
anything about people who just feel really pressed, inspired, whatever, to do the thing that makes them creative. I can mind meld with that and be really productive just based on that shared energy.
That is cool. I hadn't thought of sort of taking another person's energy
mm-hmm.
in that. I mean, that sounds kind of vampire-like, but it's good because they have already put their energy out there. They aren't using it in that moment. They have shared it.
I can't imagine, I don't want to be an investigative reporter, but there's something about watching investigative reporters get on a story and really go after it and write it.
That's funny.
Like, that's why I watch all The President's Men over and over and over again, because it just really gets me, I don't know, jazzed up.
I can open any book, pretty much no matter how dry, that is about like you know, creating scenes or building your novel or structuring your novel or whatever, like that, or, you know, writing a little bit faster. And I have some favorites, which I have mentioned a zillion times, but I can, if I'm feeling a little bit of a loss, I will pick up Save the Cat. I'll pick up Jenny Nash's Blueprint for a Book. I will pick up, From 2K to 10K, which is a book about writing faster. That's the one I've been using lately. There's one called Take Off Your Pants. And it doesn't really matter. I've got some in my Kindle, too. It doesn't really matter what it is. If it's a book about writing, and honestly, sometimes it's better if it's boring. None of those are. Or if I've read it a lot of times, because then it's just like, okay, I'm done with this now. It's time to go. It's time
to
put it into play.
Last night watched episode 2 of Station 11, and I don't write, I generally don't write fiction, but I was so inspired by the world building that happens in that it was bedtime and I couldn't go write at that point. But I was like, man, I'm so inspired by the kind of brain that comes up with just the world building that she does in that story. So that the author, Hillary or Emily St. John Mandel?
Hillary.
Yeah. That I'm a little bit in awe now, and I need to go read all of her work because I'm not familiar with her work. I need to go read all of it now, apparently. So.
I wonder if it's St. John like it is in England.
I don't know.
I don't know either. Well, if it is, we'll throw that out there.
I made the mistake of going to her website right after we started watching to say, you know, how have I missed this? How does everyone know? And it's not that I didn't know about her. It's just I'm also not a fantasy. Anyway, and I had somehow been oblivious to the fact that she won essentially all the awards and got all of the lists of like best books and everybody loves everything that she's written. So now I have to catch up.
Cool.
So this is fairly common for me to be about 3 years behind the curve, 4 years behind the curve on something really popular.
Yeah.
That's an MO of mine. Yeah.
So, you know, this is hacking and like getting our energy to match the thing that we need to do. And I guess at the beginning we did talk more about rolling with the energy. And that was something I wanted to think about too, because when you're... So for whatever reason, I have had multiple people ask me in the last week or so when I say I'm working on my third book, but wait, you just finished the second book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Do you always start another one right away? And the answer for me at the moment is yes, but I do know authors that take off some, and by start another one, you know, that can mean think, it can mean what we talked about last week about ideas, it can mean writing around other things. But I do know authors that specifically take some time to make a gap and do other things with their energy and sort of build up and re-input. And I guess that was part of, I wanted to talk about if your energies have switched and you are really wanting, you know, if you're between projects and you don't have a deadline, sort of maintaining a writerly energy, but not necessarily a 1,000-word-a-day habit or whatever. What do you do when you're in between projects and deadlines and sort of can make a choice?
I the little things like essays and short stories, I think, can be really useful. I know Serena's talked about that. I think I've talked a bunch of times about how I'd really love to do an essay collection at some point. And the essays are nice, biteable, you know, manageable chunks of stuff. But I always have ideas churning. And as we talked about in the Where Do You Get Your Ideas episode, it's good to have that churn always happening. That slow simmer, I suppose, is the better metaphor there on the back burner. But as soon as I finished The Addiction Inoculation, I was already thinking about what I would work on next and whether that was, you know, I hadn't actually opened a new... I always do start a new proposal document, though. I will say that. I take my old proposal and I clear out the details from that book and start a new one so that there's a landing pad for the ideas as they come in and the structure as they come in. So there's always has to be a landing pad somewhere, especially now that I'm afraid of losing ideas to short-term memory loss. Yeah. But I think it would be really hard to be the kind of person who finishes one book and then is like opens the document and is like, it was a dark and stormy night and starts the next thing right away.
My brain is so immersed. Yeah, no, and also there's the nature of, you know, the nature of the process of putting a book out into the world, whether you're traditionally published or independently published. A lot of the stuff after you've finished the draft is different stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're picking your narrators and arranging your cover and starting to do the promotion, that shifts into a different realm of work. For me, once I'm out of the editorial process, it moves from morning work to afternoon work.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So when it's moved to that other kind of work, then the morning time becomes open for other things.
That's definitely true. I also like the, I have to say, the built-in brain space that happens when you hit send on a draft or send on edits, that you know you're not going to hear back unless you've got the kind of editor who turns around and read. My editor is really fast. So often I'll send something off and sort of be like, great, I've got 2 weeks now before I have to think about this thing. And then she turns around and sends it back within a couple of days, which, you know, is great. But, you know, I do need some time, I think, in order to come down off of that burst.
Yeah. Random, yeah. I mean, not sort of just as an aside, I was working with someone recently who's about to query, and my rule for her and my rule for everyone, and I think that this is a rule for sending things to agents and editors too, although it's going to vary depending on your relationship, is when you do that, when you hit send, it's pencils down.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because so first of all, with if you're querying, if you could still do work, see, and you don't send a query until you have a full, because if somebody gets back to you tomorrow, you right. want to be able to send them that full right this minute. If you could still work on it, you are not ready.
That's great. If you could still mess,
I mean, if you could still go in and play with sentences, I mean, okay, I could go play with sentences right. in the Chicken right. Sisters right now, but no, if you still feel like you need to be working on it, then you are not ready. So to me, the minute you start sending agent things, you have to be, your pencil's down on the document. And I've got that rule with my agent and my editor for drafts too. If I send it to them, and part of that is just not wanting to get into version hell. You know, where yeah, you like yeah, yeah, yeah. sent them something yeah. and they send it back and you're like, oh, but I changed 6 words in chapter 6 and then you marked up this whole document and I have to go figure out which 6 words I changed in chapter. Just don't. That is not, no, there's no amount of work that you can do in that interval that is going to make version hell worth it.
Yeah.
So ignore chapter six,
but that's the right chapter 10 and 12, but ignore chapter 13. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's yeah. the worst.
Or that really bad thing where you're like, wait, don't read that yeah. one. Read this one.
How don't, to get your yeah. agent to fire you. 101.
Yeah. Yeah. And goodness knows, never do that with querying. But yeah. Yeah. So yeah, the pencils down period is a lovely period. And if you know, it's a good time to take a vacation.
Can I ask you a question, though?
That exists, too.
Let me ask you this, though. And I think this happens to me all the time. So let's say you're working on something and all of a sudden you have a great idea. You feel like, oh, wait, no, this now is more important, mainly because it's more immediate. And it feels more important when it's really immediate. How do you not fall to the lure of, oh, this new shiny thing is something that I should start working on now instead of getting the edits done on the old, slightly about to tarnish thing that is actually due in a couple of weeks?
That, yeah, shiny thing syndrome is tough, and it applies to lots of possibilities, all the possibilities, really. I write the idea down. I actually did. I had an idea the other night that I was like, I think this idea is better than the book that I am already a third of the way into and have sketched out till the end. This is way better. This has a hook. It has a hook I can describe in one sentence. I've never had an idea that was a one-sentence hook before. I wrote it down in my notebook, and then, you know, I sort of very firmly tucked myself back up with the thing that I'm working on. And, you know, so one way to do that, one way to approach that is to consider the possibility that the reason something else looks shiny is that the thing you're working is on isn't shiny anymore because you've hit a boring patch and you should not write that patch. The answer to that is, okay, this scene needs, we need to tesseract from this scene to the next sec while skipping over this boring bit. Because no one, I don't want to read it and no one wants to
read it. Yeah, if you're not interested by that boring bit, I can guarantee your reader's not going to be.
Yeah, so if the shiny thing is distracting you from something that you're writing, that's, you know, that's an answer. If the shiny thing is distracting you from something that you're revising for a deadline where you're not, you know, there's not an option. It's right. Not like you might give up the thing that you're working on in order to pursue the shiny thing because, you know, you're getting paid or whatever. You know you're not. Then giving yourself a little time with the shiny thing at the end of your day might work. As long as you also give yourself permission to not pursue the shiny thing at that point, because I often find the shiny thing only looked good as a procrastination tool.
Mm-hmm. I know someone who has only 3/4 completed like 6 shiny things that, and no actual one real completed thing. And if, you know, if that's not their goal, then that's fine.
Yeah.
But I think if you have a lot of, if that is a problem for you, then maybe not being a closer is your problem. And then you need to look at that. But shiny things can look awfully wonderful when you're frustrated about not being able to reach the finish line with something else. So I think just acknowledging that that's a thing, that that's a temptation is probably, and writing it down, I think that's a really good help too.
Well, I think a lot of this is just about how you work. And this is not a thought that is original to me, but you know, if you have completed a lot of things to your satisfaction using whatever system you use, whether that's chasing off after a shiny thing when you need to, or you know, taking out every Friday aside for essays, or writing, like some people say that they, you know, get through a whole book by only writing the bit that interests them at any given moment and then mashing them all together at the end. Or, you know, some people sequentially move through it. I would say that if you have completed, to your satisfaction, a number of projects in that way, then that works for you. If you have not, then it doesn't. Yeah. And you need to stop pursuing the shiny things or stop writing it out of order and try a different approach that does get you through to the end, assuming that through to the end is your goal.
Yeah, I'm actually wrestling with that right now because I have something that I wrote for my agent and she really likes it, and a proposal. And, you know, I like it too. I really do. I just, there's this other thing that I really, 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 really like. And wrestling with those two things right now is really hard because I don't know that I can give 100% of my energy to both at the same time. So just that back and forth.
No, you actually do know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I do know. Yeah, yeah.
You answered that question by the way you phrased it.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as 100% of my energy to two things. It's like you can't have two priorities.
That's
just by definition.
Yeah.
Calling you out, baby.
Yep. And I do like both of those things. So how exactly to approach both of those things is the question, and the timeliness of each of the things and how it fits into sort of the next couple of years. And I've worked really, really hard to figure out whether that's a shiny things complex or a shiny things problem, or if that's a, no, really this thing is truer to you than the other thing. Mm. So anyway, that's what I'm
working. As an observer of you, I say that it does work for you to work on the thing that is interesting you.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like that, that is a system that has worked for you successfully. So if it were me or Serena with two things that we wanted to work on, we would be like, okay, thing A gets Tuesday and Thursday from 3 to, you know, or whatever. And thing B gets this and this. And we would do that rigidly.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Until we changed it, because we're okay about changing it. Whereas I feel like it does work for you to wake up every morning. And this actually comes back, as I think we always do, to that light up calendar that you have. So it was so funny because at the beginning of the year, you were like, every day I'm going to set a goal. And then if I meet it, I'm going to light the light up calendar. And I was like, if that would not work for me.
Yeah.
Because some days I would be like, oh, my goal today is to brush my teeth. Because I would really want to light that
it's
calendar.
It's working so beautifully.
Exactly. It's a different, you can set your energy in the morning. You can roll with what work is, whereas I need to know beforehand what it is that I'm going to work on. It's just different ways of, it's just.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also why writing out, I have always admired your ability to write out your meal plans and shop accordingly. But I don't think that would work, not just for me, but for my family, because it's a what am I in the mood for kind of situation on a day-to-day basis. I don't think I can plan to be in the mood for something on a given day. So it's worth it for me to have to run down the street and get the two or three ingredients I don't have so that I can be eat the thing that I'm in the mood for.
That is, yeah, you have put your finger on it. I do not care what anyone else is in the mood for, nor do I particularly care what I'm in the mood for.
Interesting.
Granted, I make the meal plan, so I like all of it.
Yeah.
And that is some of my urge to control it. But yeah, and it's the same way with writing. I don't care what I'm in the mood for. I care what I planned to get done.
I wonder if that's different for fiction versus nonfiction, because you're world building and it's easier to stay in one world and try not to be in another world at the same time. I don't know. But I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah.
Just
I mean, to go back to when I was in nonfiction, I don't know. I mean, I didn't write the nonfiction book by hopping around.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote it in an order that I had planned. But on the other hand, you know, I used to wake up every day and need to come up with a topic, but I usually and need it to be topical sometimes, but I usually had a plan.
Back to that that thing that I think I've mentioned before, that Outlander lady, help me, the person who wrote the Outlander books, anyway, she,
yes.
And I'll think of it in a second. She said in an interview once that she works on, at least probably early on in the books, obviously you can't do this all the way through, that she wakes up and works on the scene that is calling to her. So,
right.
And then she strings her book together after. And I can't, although, that doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Diana Gabaldon is her name, by the
mm-hmm.
way. But I can totally get that impulse. That is very much an impulse that I like, because I really am at my very best when I'm most emotionally invested in the words, the idea, the thought process, the energy, whatever that thing is. So I get that.
And I have never tried to do it that way. So I can't say it wouldn't work, but it doesn't immediately appeal to me. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's nice if you writing along sequentially and come across something that you have written out. That would be lovely.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I would think that would be an editing nightmare, though, too, to string together. I mean, I guess she probably has an outline for where she thinks the plot's going to go and all that sort of stuff, but it would be really hard to string together.
Well, she has her
scenes.
World and her people, but maybe mm-hmm. she did it that way from the very beginning. You know, I have definitely heard other people say that this is their approach. You know, different things work for different. Shockingly, we don't all think the same. I know that everything about our country and politics would think would suggest something different. You know, everything that's happening in the entire planet would suggest something differently. But shockingly, that's not the way that it works. So I don't know what we got at. I just wanted to talk about energies. I might add that you have had a massive house energy lately, which is fascinating
to
me, because at the moment, I have, like, I'm literally, you just can see, the rest of you can't, that there is an unbuilt shelf behind me and piles of, not, I mean, there's always piles of books, but this is beyond that. Normally, this would bug me. Like, normally, I would have, like, I'm just organized, especially in January, which was mm-hmm. very recently, it was January. I have had zero January energy this year. None. I walk through the basement with all the holiday decorations strewn all over the place, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't care.
Okay, you know why I have massive house energy is I gave myself permission when we created our goals at the beginning of the year. I said, we have been living in this house for years now, and there are projects that I have not even started, and I don't know how I could get them done while trying to write things. And so what I've said is, and thank goodness also for the calendar thing helps me do that, which is to say, today I'm not going to write. Today is just for painting that thing. And I have had more joy this month from that than just about anything. I have finished 3 major projects. I am keeping track of all the things I'm learning. I'm keeping a list of all the things I'm learning. I can't remember when I've had such a happy January, February. And I think it's simply because I'm acknowledging what makes me really happy and doing those things and getting a ton done, but not having to be torn between, oh, I feel guilty that I'm not writing, or, oh, I feel guilty that I'm not finishing that painting job that, you know, is halfway done in the front entryway, mm-hmm. whatever. I'm having a blast. And I think that's been...
Do you think this energy will feed your writing energy later?
I hope so. I think for me, it's
kind of like input.
Yeah, it also, the way I've been doing these house projects is also in a very creative way. Like it's not just about, you know, slapping boards together. I feel like I've been creative, and I've been working the whole time I'm doing it thinking about my writing stuff. Mm-hmm. So there is still writing progress being done, just not in the form of me sitting at the desk for 4 hours straight getting the words done. And obviously that's going to have to switch back really, really soon. So I've actually looked at my schedule and created some deadlines for myself, and I'm about to email my editor and say, just so you know, I am creating this self-imposed deadline so that we'll see this thing on this date, so that it'll put some pressure on me to finish the house stuff, or at least partition my time. So,
right. It's just funny, 'cause I have been forgiving myself for walking past the messes. I'm in the other place. And I guess that's part of what inspired this whole conversation, was that I just felt we were in different places mm-hmm. with our writing energy. And I liked that we were both respecting that in a way that I'm not sure we would have 10 years ago.
I don't know that I can't think of a time since I quit teaching where I have not been focused solely on the writing. And that it's been just really nice to give myself a break from that, in order to fulfill other parts of me that I have not been acknowledging completely, which is good. We can change.
Well, I feel like I'm prone to putting the piles of stuff ahead of other things. But my mother would step disdainfully over them and say, no, you've always been good at having fun at the expense of... Disdainfully is mean. I think she means it sincerely.
I think it's always good when outside observers, like my mother recently said something about, oh my gosh, you need to take a break. Why are you working so hard? And the working so hard she was referring to is something that I would refer to as play. So I think I'm always on a good trajectory when it looks like that. So yeah, I'm happy with that.
All right. Well, we're rolling with our separate energies and it's going pretty good.
It is great. So. It is good. Do we want to talk about today what we have been reading?
Could you do that? I can do it on the spur of the moment.
I can do that very, very quickly because we need to do it fairly quickly.
Let's pause for a moment.
Sure. All right. What we have been reading, you are actually going to be hearing about this on the podcast if you haven't already. There is a book that comes out at the end of March, the last Tuesday in March, called The Vortex by Scott Carney and Jason McLean. The true story of history's deadliest storm and unspeakable war and liberation, which to me, I read that and I was like, not my usual fodder. I am saying it now. I will be saying it over again. This is going to be one of those books I recommend for dissection of broad, deep, complicated topics in nonfiction when you're trying to figure out how to organize them based on lots of narratives needing to be woven together. The organization of this book, Scott and Jason, I had never met Jason McLean before. He is a journalist. He also has a PhD in, I can't remember what his PhD is in, but he does foreign relations. He does... he writes a lot about conflict and what he calls fragile places, like places that are at war or, you know, climate change sort of stuff. Anyway, The Vortex is about this massive storm that hit Pakistan and not only caused 500,000 deaths, but it also caused war. It caused changes, geopolitical changes, and it also, there just were all these tentacles to this story, and it sounds like a story you could never in a million years get your arms around, and yet the two of these did it, and they did it in such a beautiful way that this is going to be on my dissection list because it's so well done, and I have interviewed them for the podcast, you'll be hearing from them, and it is a beautiful, beautiful book. It is a gorgeously written book. Loved it, loved it, loved it. The Vortex.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
I was inspired.
No, it's not out, is it?
It'll be out at the end of March.
Okay. So if it sounds joyful, this is my new suggestion to everyone. Pre-order something that will bring you joy, because
yes,
pre-orders are great for authors, but they're also great for you when suddenly they're in your, you know, your indie bookstore is calling and saying, "We have your pre-order," or it's popped up yeah, in your ebook account, whatever that may be from, or dropped into your mailbox. It's like getting a little present for yourself and stuff to look forward to.
Yeah.
It's so important.
And P.S., this is the second book that Scott Carney has released during a pandemic. The dude has been through this before, and it is not easy. So if you are at all interested in that topic, do throw him a pre-order, because releasing a book during a pandemic is no easy feat.
Nope. All right. Well, yeah, I read something I really enjoyed. It's called The Secret to Superhuman Strength by Alison Bechdel. It is
I've wanted to read that.
It is wonderful. I think it's her best work. I mean,
really?
You know, she's always amazing, but this is, it sort of purports to be a book about her history with exercise, and it mm-hmm, arguably is, but it is really about the writerly, the connection, I guess, between sort of writerly introspection and physical exertion. And I don't know, it's just, it's really amazing. It's got a lot of stuff about a series of others who, you know, Wordsworth and Thoreau and a number of other authors whose names I have momentarily forgotten, who did a variety, you know, who climbed or exerted themselves. It's got a whole connection to Jack Kerouac, who also, you know, really struggled to sort of marry his physical self and his writerly self. And I think that there's this whole theme of that running through the book. And also, you know, she's getting older. She's losing some of the people that she loves, which doesn't sound cheerful, but it's Alison Bechdel, so it's sort of gloriously wry and wonderfully done. Anyway, I happen to be a graphic novel reader and a fan of them, but I guarantee this would absorb you in the same way as any memoir.
Oh, good. I'm a big fan. Not only loved Fun Home, but saw Fun Home put on Broadway, and it's tremendous.
It's got that in it. Like, she talks about the experience of having that happen.
Oh, cool.
So you would especially, meta moment.
All right, I'm going to go pick that up. I'm going to definitely pick that up. I think my kids would like it too, so cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yay, thank you for that.
So speaking of really enjoyed, this was super fun.
Yeah, super fun.
And campers, we would love it if any of y'all have some questions and would like to maybe be coached through something on the show, anything from how you could get your own energy back to, how to finish up your querying process, how to pick an agent, anything like that. We would, we'd find it super fun to have you on and walk you through and, you know, hopefully share some great information with others at the same time. So if you've got a topic you'd like to hear us talk about on the show, or if you'd like to share a writery problem with us and possibly be a guest, email us at amwriting@substack.com.
Yay! And go do that. And then until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.